KDE developer, but I work on something called PDE, which is equally cool. Close enough, that's why I'm here. And Eclipse is also an open source project, so I'm sure there's a lot of similarity between what I do and what you guys do. So I'll just, what I'm going to do, actually what we do first, I usually, by a show of hands, I just don't know how many of you are familiar with Eclipse. How many of you are familiar with Eclipse? I've heard of Eclipse at some point in their lives.
Yeah, well.
Not the solar eclipse, no. How many have actually used Eclipse? Okay. How many people actually do Java development? How many people do Java development? Good one. More than I expected. Right. What I'll do then is actually I'll just give you a brief overview of what I do very quickly, because I'm not an egomaniac. And I'll just tell you briefly what Eclipse is and what the vision was and what the vision for the future will be. I started working on Eclipse 2.5 years ago in 2000. It was close to the Eclipse 2.0 release. And for the 3.0 release, I was led the development effort for the plugin development environment. And what that is, if you've heard of Eclipse, you've heard of the word plugins, because it's all we're in the business of plugins. And we want to be able to use Eclipse to develop plugins for Eclipse to make our own food, in a sense. So we developed something called the plugin development environment. What that does for you is it provides all the tools necessary to create for you as developers for all the stages of plugin development. So that includes creating the plugin, developing the plugin, all the files that are needed, the manifest files, testing your plugin, so in a sense you launch another Eclipse instance to see your plugin in action, and at the end deploying your plugin. So we provide all the tooling for that, and that's what I do. Now, so this is the agenda for today, actually. It's we're going to talk about what's new in 3.0. This talk is usually, what's new in 3.0 usually applies more when people have been familiar with what was in 2.0 and prior and see what's new and exciting in 3.0. In this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to give a little overview of what Eclipse really is and why it came about and how it came about. So I'll do that, and then we'll talk about what's 3.0, because we've actually tackled some really important problems for scalability. Because we're victim of our success in a sense, because when we first started the Eclipse project, we didn't realize how people were going to use it, or how well it's going to be, or the sheer number of plugins that are going to be in the particular Eclipse product. So now we're talking about Eclipse-based products that are contain, I don't know, over 1,000 plugins and stuff like that. So really, there has been a lot of UI-related issues that we need to take care of in 3.0 if we want to tackle large and support large-scale products. Other problems and other issues I wanted to tackle through is UI responsiveness. People don't like to wait for stuff. You don't want to block in the UI when you want to do anything. People, have a lot of things to do. So we've done a lot of work in the UI responsiveness. We've updated the look. It has a very snappy look in 3.0, and I'm going to demo it on my ThinkPad today. I have to apologize though. I'm going to do all my demos on Windows XP today, and the reason for that is I don't have Linux installed on my own ThinkPad. And then we're going to talk about major changes in the Eclipse architecture, actually, and the Eclipse frame of mind, which is a rich client platform in which we actually took it. Eclipse used to be known as, a lot of people think of it as just an IDE, but it's actually a lot more than that. And a lot of people actually want to build applications, not necessarily IDEs, based on Eclipse because it has such a brilliant architecture. So that's what it's called, the rich client platform. It won't make you rich, but you will definitely get some really nice looking products. We're going to talk about the new runtime. We're going to talk about JDK, the Java development tooling in Eclipse, and all the cool things that are happening there, and then some other significant improvements. And then, at the end, we're going to talk about Eclipse in a sense. Most people actually think of Eclipse as just a basic Eclipse platform, and there's actually a lot more to it than that. There's a whole bunch of projects, including C development projects, and all sorts of projects that are based on Eclipse, and we're gonna showcase some of those things for you today. So what is Eclipse? We have a particular definition, and actually it's very carefully worded, and every word means something very important. So Eclipse is an open platform, or as we used to call it, an IDE, for anything and nothing in particular. Now, why is it open? It's because its architecture is designed to allow third-party party vendors to actually easily add extensions. And by Eclipse accomplishes that by providing a certain number of function points that the vendors can want to plug into, easily plug into. And then when you launch Eclipse, you will actually see your function points. Let's say if you contribute, if you're in the XML tooling business and you contribute to an XML editor, for instance, you plug your editor into the extension point in Eclipse, or call editors, and then you know you will see your editor among the editors. So it's actually very nice, and we'll show some of that later on today. And it is a platform because it's not really a finished product per se. It's designed to be extended indefinitely. And actually, what makes Eclipse cool is, Eclipse products are only cool when the developers on them actually make cool products. So let's say, and I've seen, and a lot of Eclipse-based initiatives and a lot of cool plugins out there. It's truly amazing what people are doing. And Eclipse is, because it's so easily extendable, I've seen whole sorts of plugins that will be amazing. And it is an IDE because by default, what we have what provides for you is we provide all the IDE related activities. So you have your managing your workspaces, you can build and launch and debug applications, you have CVS, built-in CVS support, you have code versioning. So it is like an IDE in a sense. And it's an IDE for anything, because as I just said, we've seen it being used, and we've seen so many projects and so many products built on Eclipse that really become used for web services, for Java development, for the ACF contest. Most of their contests, was the last one was in Hawaii, I think. They had to come up with games, games, and they had to build those games using Eclipse. So it was actually very fun to see what kind of innovative things people can come up with. And it's an open platform for anything and nothing in particular, because Eclipse, although it's usually associated with the Java development tools, because Java development comes free with Eclipse. Eclipse not only biased towards Java development. The Java development tools, they play by the same rules. If they want to contribute an editor, they play by the same rule that if you want to contribute a plugin, you do it the exact same way that the Java people do that. Contribute their plugins. If you want to contribute, and for PDE myself, if I contribute anything to the platform that you will see when you download Eclipse, I have to play by the exact same rules that you know anybody else would. So literally, there's no bias. The people plugins that are coming to the platform for Java plugins, everybody plays by the same rules. So I mean by it's really nothing in particular. So as I said, we are really a victim of our own success. And with that, we have seen a lot of products being built on top of Eclipse, and we're talking over 1,000 plugins per product. And even with Eclipse itself, if you want to download it and let's say you've heard about Eclipse, oh, it's a cool project, I want to download some CD and see how it works. You can open, let's say you launch and you see the Workbench come up and you want to create a plugin. I'm like, okay, you look at it and you say, okay, now what? Now how do I create a plugin? What kind of things can I do with it? Because I've heard it's so great, okay, but what makes it so great? What can I do? And there's not a lot of answers for the novice developer, and the problem becomes so much harder for big products. The other day, and this is when I actually sympathized with this whole thing, why we need such a thing as a welcome page. The other day I wanted to do some web services. I'm like, oh, I want to create a web service and do something like that. I was using an Eclipse-based product, and I wanted to create the web service, and I launched the product, and it has all the menus that are there, and I know it can do what I want to do, but I'm like, okay, now what do I do? Do I create this project? And there's so many things you can go wrong when we realize we actually have to do something. And that something actually is one of the things that fall under this something is a welcome page. And I'll show you actually after this slide a little demo of what the welcome page looks like for Eclipse. And then another thing is, back to my example, you know, I don't know how to create a web service. How do I do it, okay? Somebody tell me, please. And there's a concept of cheat sheets in which, you know, it's a sequence of steps that, you know, individual plugins contribute. So for instance, I'm in, uh, I own the PDE component, and I want people to know how to create a PDE plugin project. So what I'll do is actually I'll create a cheat sheet for them. And what a cheat sheet would be is a sequence of steps in which, you know, you do, okay, step number one, do this, and there's actually a function on which, you know, links in which you invoke wizards or perform certain steps, and when you finish the step, you'll see a check mark. So just, you know, kind of a guide you through those multi-step workflows as an example. And then there's the other problem, another big problem actually is the speech against products. As I said, products can come in, you can see products like thousands of plugins, and you'd start the workbench, and my God, you see all those menus. And if I'm so glad that all the elements are there, and it's all nice and everything, and my company paid $4,000 for a license, but do I really want to see all those things all the time? I know they're there, but I don't want to see them all the time. I don't know, I do web tooling, I don't want to see all the other, you know, crap that I'm not using. So we've added, in Eclipse 3, we've added the concept of capabilities, in which, based on your role or your interests, you can actually regroup UI contributions into certain function groups, and you can actually filter them out and filter them back in based on what you want. Okay, so the welcome page. So the welcome page is the first thing you see when Eclipse comes up, and this is actually your first introduction to your product. We'll use Eclipse as an example because we give a sample. We give a sample intro, but whatever product is shipped on top of Eclipse actually is free to contribute their own welcome page. They're free to customize whichever they want. So everything is easily pluggable, and so that people, you know, G2E for instance is not part of Eclipse. So let's say if you're an XML tooling or G2E tooling, you want to, for instance, on your web page say, okay. Tell me more about G2E, samples from G2E, and stuff like that. And in Eclipse, what we do is we have four main categories. We have one, which is end-to-end tutorial. And this basically takes form as a cheat sheet, which I just mentioned. There's a quick links to overview documentation. There's, if you want to look at, listen, you want to create an editor and you don't know how, and because editors are usually one of the more difficult things to implement. So then we give you code samples. You can download the code sample, you can look at it, you can launch it using PDE to see it in action. And there's other links, let's say what's new, so we'll give you a quick link on, you know, what's new in Eclipse 3.0, resources, news groups, and stuff like that to look at. So what I'm going to do now is I'm gonna launch Eclipse, and we'll show you the welcome page before I go on. Yeah, here we go. So Eclipse opens, and before the idea used to just show up, and now this is the welcome page that I was talking about. This is, we call it the intro, and it has all the links. This is the overview that I talked about. So if you want to go to the overview, you find out what Eclipse is all about. Workbench basics, team support, people, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't know how to merge and branch and stuff like that. So this is where you get all the information from. Java development, Eclipse plugin development, which is to me is the most important thing in the world. And then you can go to tutorials. These are the end-to-end tutorials for Java development. If you want to create a standalone SLVT application, how to do that. How to deploy a feature on this site. This is one more advanced task of PDE, is, you know, because after you do your plugin, companies don't just, you know, ship plugins because you don't want that kind of granularity. Plugins usually are shipped together as a feature. We call it a feature. And you publish your feature on an update site. You have to do all that. PDE provides all the tooling for that. And this is one of the examples how you can actually get more help and how to do it. There's the samples that I was just talking about. You're going to download SWT samples, and we're going to see one today. So we're going to look at how to do it. So we'll provide all that as an intro. And to me, as a seasoned Eclipse developer, as I said, it's really, I didn't realize how important that is until I actually ran into a problem when I was using the product and I didn't know how to use it. And actually, this is one of the most important things that we did for a pleasant user experience, I guess, initiative that we did in 3.0. And then when you've done, or you sit back, or you don't want to see it anymore, you just go directly to the workbench, and this is what you see as a workbench. So this is before the welcome page came to Frio. This is what people used to see when they first started the product. And they go, okay, where do I start? Which, how can I create the project? What's the project? What's the plugin? So that's why the welcome page is actually a nice introduction. Now, back to the presentation. Cheat sheets. That's what I was talking about, and I'll show you a cheat sheet right now. The cheat sheet guide users through multi-step operations. So creating a plugin is not a one, it's not a one-step, you can just do it in one step, so you're going to have to go through several steps. What are those steps? The cheat sheet that PDE contributes tells you how. Provides links to documentation if it says, okay, well, you know, you create a plugin project that has to have a Java nature. What's the Java nature? We'll give you links to tell you what is the Java nature, why you need to have it, for instance. And implementation-wise, how is the cheat sheet going to be implemented? It's the content all defined in XML, and in the XML, let's say, and we're going to see it in 2 seconds, let's say step number two, invoke the Java wizard, and you click on a link, and you will see the Java wizard being invoked. So that click on it, this is the do it, you're actually calling one of a basic call of action, you know, to the Java code that actually invokes the wizard. So back to and this is where we see the cheat sheets. And when you look at cheat sheets, you will see all the ones that are contributed to the product. So based on whatever product you have, you will see a different variety of tasks. And let's use the one create Eclipse plugin using PDE. And a cheat sheet appears on the side, of course, because you don't want to draw on just to hide all the real estate of your workspace. And introduction tells you what a cheat sheet is. And you read it, you find, you understand the introduction, you click next, and there's a check mark, and then configure PDE, you read that. Let's get to some part when you're actually invoking the wizard. Oh, okay. This is actually a step in which it will actually do something for you. This is explaining to you what a target platform is, and this is all PDE related stuff, so you read it. And so as you just saw, JavaScript actually invoked the preferences, tells you what a target platform is, so you can just do whatever it asks you to do and just cancel, and on and on and on. And as you do it, you'll see the check marks going in, and by the end, you'll actually have deployed the plugin. So this is, again, this is very important. Had I had that, when I want to create a web service, I wouldn't have missed all day. So this was, again, a very important part of the whole user experience initiative. Capabilities. There's this whole progressive disclosure, which you really don't want to expose everything to your users all the time, unless your users are interested in plugin development. Maybe the PDE shouldn't be there for them to see. Unless they're interested in Java development, perhaps Java development to a contribution shouldn't show up. They're C programmers, maybe just the C development tool should be showing up. So this is a progressive disclosure. You don't. By default, the product can actually say, okay, I want by default to show this certain number of groups. But, you know, if we hide everything by default, really, how are they going to know that, you know, we can provide PDE tooling? If we hide it all the time, they might not even be aware. So there should always be a function point in which, you know, they can trigger that capability to be activated. So, And in the preferences, what we do is we actually list all the capabilities, and you can actually filter them in and out. But there has to be trigger points because people are not always aware of preferences. People don't really know all that the developer was thinking when he actually designed the whole thing. So we have to talk about these. They have to see them at some point in the UI to know, oh, maybe I should be creating a plugin, and let's go in and then when prompted, do you wanna create a plugin or not? So what I'm going to do now, actually, is we're going to show you some of the capabilities. In Eclipse, it's a relatively small product. We're only talking about 84 plugins. So really, the whole capabilities thing actually was needed to address the whole cluttering of the UI. There's just too many, because in a 1,000 plugin product, you're going to have tons and tons of pop-up menus. So really, it was addressed to for those kinds of problems. In Eclipse, there is a problem, but it's not that severe because we're only dealing with 84 plugins. But let's go to the workbench capabilities, and you can actually see the ones that are defined by Eclipse. So let's, okay, now keep your eye on, let's say, the plugin development preference pages, and let's disable, let's say, I don't want CPD anymore. I don't care about plugins, I don't want to develop plugins, and let's just say okay. Now, next time you go, oh, there's no longer PDE. It's gone. Also, when you create a new project, for instance, and I didn't show you this beforehand, we, prior to disabling the PDE capability, we had a PDE category, but now it's not there. However, what is there is still a plugin project, and this is the trigger point that I'm talking about. We did hide all the stuff about PDE, but yet we left some trigger points, and the trigger point in this case is a plugin project. So let's say you disabled PDE a long time ago, and now all of a sudden you want to create a plugin. You still have a trigger point, okay? So it's a plugin project. You click next, and then say, oh, okay, you know what? This will actually enable the plugin development capability. Do you want to say yes or no? And you say yes. And now if you go back, so now you can actually create, but now if you, so you go through the widget, you can create a plugin, but now if you go into preferences, plugin development is back. If you go into the plugin development category is back, and now you actually see plugin development, so now it's by default enabled. So this is the progressive disclosure that we were actually going for. Don't show everything all at once, just customize it, you know. The product actually is the one that defines it. Not the individual plugins, the product, it's not at a product level, it's designed, okay, what are the categories, what are the defaults to be seen, and what should be triggered, what the user would have to make sure they, to check themselves or not. So all those decisions are made at a product level, they're not made at a plugin level, because you really want to organize all this progressive disclosure at the product level. So now, back to the presentation. UI responsiveness. This is a huge problem in whenever you're designing a product. Because you know, people don't want to wait for stuff. An example of how especially unnecessarily. And I'll give you an example of unnecessary wait really means, let's say, in an Java IDE kind of environment. If you're compiling to, I don't know, 100 projects and the compiler is gonna take a long, long time, why does the UI have to block? Why can't you just, you know, if you want to create a new project or if you want to change your preferences, you should still be able to do that. It does not conflict with the build. It's totally unrelated. The build can go on in the background and you can get on through. Like, blocking the UI is something, instances like that is just, it's just unacceptable to people. If you're checking out stuff from CVS, okay, check out stuff from CVS, but you know, you shouldn't just, your life should not have to stop just because you're checking out 10 projects and there's so much code. So, we wanted to reduce the wait time for the user by running operations in the background. So when we introduced that concept of responsive UI and support starting to go back to take place in the background, people were saying, well, yeah, but you know, stuff is taking somewhat longer time to finish. So people would start to confuse responsiveness with performance. Responsiveness and performance obviously are not the same. Because when you're actually executing a task in the background, you enable the user to go on with his life, but the task itself will actually obviously take a little longer because it's on the background thread, and so responsiveness and performance are definitely not the same thing. Again, we have to be very careful when actually we're being very helpful to people, because some people don't like to be helped. And so, for instance, if you say, okay, well, I'm going to make everything just back on task, the user has no chance or doesn't even have the option to run something in the background or the foreground, that will come back and backfire right away. So you need to, there are several types of background jobs. There's user initiated, which when you actually, let's say you're exporting a plugin or you're doing a search, doing a search really makes sense because in the background, but still, people might want to see it in the foreground. So in this case, what we do is we actually show you a dialogue saying, oh, do you want to do it in the background, do you want to do it in the foreground, and the user have the options. The stuff that people have no control over in a sense, but they can't stop it at some point, is all the operators that fall under automatic background jobs, in which case, if you have auto build on, so let's say if you're doing a Java development, and you save the Java file, the auto build takes in to compile the file. Now this, if you set it to be in auto build mode, the back is going to go on in the background. But let's say if it takes a long time, and I'll show you where there's a progress view in which you can just go in and you can cancel if you want to take a long time. So you still have control over it. Stuff that you don't have control over, and you really don't want to have control over, because is and we call them the system background tasks. And that's and this is, these are reserved for stuff like indexing. So for instance, you have a and I'm always using the Java development because it's just but that can be applied to anything. But let's say because this is my first example, indexing. You have a workspace with 100 projects, and when you launch Eclipse in the background, actually the Java indexer starts working to index all the files so that in the background, so that let's say when you want to say, oh, open a type hierarchy, I'll show you the hierarchy, you would have all that information there. Or let's say if you want to do a Java search, like oh, search for references to all to this method, for instance, then you really when the user wants to start that search, it would really really bad if the indexing started right then. The Java model should have had some information at that point, so for the search to be much much quicker. So that indexing that I'm talking about, this will always happen in the background. It happens all the time, and in systems, the user cannot stop because they shouldn't have the authority to stop if they wanted to. A tree expansion, same thing too. If you're in a CVS view and you're expanding a node in the view, some of those expansion because it's retrieving the data to see what kind of folders are underneath a particular node. That thing can take a long time too, so you will see. So that's in the background as well. And how did we implement it? It's actually relatively easy to implement in Eclipse. Whatever background operation you want to perform, we call it a job. And it has such an easy to use API. It has a run, which runs it, the schedule, which schedules it, cancel it, and the rule. There's also the rule. And we need rules because some jobs should not be running at the same time for more than one reason. You don't want to be running more than one build job at the same time. So one has to, if there's one running, the other one should just be canceled by the system. You don't want to trigger a new job build every time. If there's a Java builder, if there's another one running. Plugin export, in my case, is a good example. When someone chooses to deploy and export a plugin, I use a particular metadata location to do all the, to do all the dirty work, I guess. And I really don't want this metadata location where I'm doing all the dirty work to be used by another plugin export job at the same time. So these jobs should be serialized. So that's where we use rules. So let's say if someone is launching a second plugin export job, the first one is running, then we queue it, and then once the first one is done, then just going on. So you need that sort of scheduling to make sure people are not abusing the whole job background and are using it correctly. So what I'm going to do now, actually, is I'm going to show you an example of I'm going to import a plugin with a lot of classes, and I'm going to launch a search. It's going to be a lengthy search, give me enough time to show me how to cancel and stuff like that. So I'm going to import JTUI. This is the biggest plugin we have in Eclipse. I'm going to import it as source. Now this is when the wizard finishes, it's going to import all the files into one before responsiveness. The compilation used to take place at the end, and the wizard would not go away until the compilation ended. But now look at this map. Now I imported the project. It's in my workspace. I can get on with my life and do something else. And yet, if you look down here, building workspace is going on in the background. So this is definitely that was definitely a big plus. We got a lot of fan mail for that one. And this is a progress view, and you'll actually see it. You'll actually see how far along you are, and you can stop it. It's taking too long, you don't want to shut down your workspace, you can actually stop it, you can cancel it, and you're done. And so this is an example of an automatic build, because I have auto build going on. So let's actually use an example of a search. I'm going to do a file search, regular expression search, and all my workspace. So as you can see, this is just going to take a very, very long time, and for a good reason, because I want to do something. So search. And this is what I'm talking about. So this is an operation that will run in the background, but we actually give you the option to run in the background or in the foreground. So you have the option. Now, typically, search does not conflict because it's a read-only operation. It does not write anything. Does not take put a lock on anything. Typically, it's really does no harm to it in the background, but still, this is one of those operations because the user is the one that's initiating it. You know what? Let's give them the option. Do you want to run the background or the foreground? In this case, let's write in the background, and I go here, and now it's starting in the background. And this is going to take such a long time. See, we're still not at 0% because we're doing a dot search on a million files, so I'm just going to stop it. So these are two examples where you actually, one in which you can stop something, but you don't have the choice to either do it in the background or the foreground, and two, you actually have the choice. Another thing for the user experience actually is, you know what? We want to produce products that look nice. For the longest time, and prior to we working on Eclipse, and prior to the whole Eclipse project, I was working on in the business integration tooling. And we were building tooling for the IQ family of runtimes for IBM. And that was a huge money maker, and still is. IQ is such a huge thing in the middleware market. And a lot of products we were building, they're all UI products that were built on Swing. And I was a student at the time, and I'm like, but you know, I always spoke my mind, and I always say, well, you know what? Why do our products look not so nice? Because I look at, you know, other people's products on certain platforms, and they look really nice. So, and you know, there was nothing we can do. We were using, you know, so Swing, you know, and to try to have a pop-up menu to pop up, you just take, I don't know, like 10 minutes on some big project. It was just too slow. So luckily, I came back I go back to school, and I came back as a regular hire. And if this project has started, I'm like, oh, okay, this is promising. So Eclipse 1.0 came up, and they're using, and they built, as most of you guys know, we built Eclipse on, based on SWT, so it has a native look and feel on different platforms. In this case, I'm using on Windows XP, so you can even see the nice radio buttons and in this one with the checkbox, like, you know, the really nice, you know, Windows XP kind of a, I know it doesn't impress you guys probably, but you know, still Linux crowd. So all of a sudden our products were very nice. But then in 2.0, they were looking nice, but they're really not that nice. So there was actually an effort to redo the widgets, actually make them look nicer, and to make the whole UI look nicer. It started to look a little dated. A lot of people liked it, but the developers and you know, want to see a change in it. So there was a lot of work done in this area, and to actually go to improve the whole UI experience altogether. So I'm going to show you a couple of things that have changed. And if you have not never used Eclipse before, really, that wouldn't make much sense to you because, well, it's all new to you. Okay, so first we have detached views. You can just Eclipse as you saw, or it can be a combination of views. You can just take one and drop it outside the workbench. You have detached views. Yeah, this is not very cool. You can, for every view, you can maximize, minimize, and restore it, and collapse it. It's all very nice and very neat. Perspective bar, we have a concept of perspectives in which it's just an arrangement of views for a particular role. Let's say if you're a Java plugin developer, you want to see all the views. Let's say you want to see the error log, you want to see the Java editor area, you want to see the factory explorer view. So we arrange all those views in a particular set called a perspective. And in Eclipse 3.0, you have the option to put the perspective bar wherever you want, to the left, to the right. Fast view is a view that does not appear all the time, and I'll show you what I mean by that. But the fast view bar, you can now put whatever you want. Drag and drop, is the feedback is much better. Detached view, as I just said. And editor management and change views. So now, let's say if you have, I don't know, 10 editors open, we used to, the editor area where you see the names of the editors used to get smaller and smaller and smaller until you can't see anything, and now you have the option to actually, you know, hide as many as you want and show as many as you want. So this was actually a big plus too when it came to our UCP sessions. People love that stuff. Again, more stuff in the views. So a lot of little things actually make a big difference. and we're going to see them in action right now. Sorry, may I do this? The menus I'm going to take this with the smaller. I'm going to take this and drop and detach it. This one. Nice detached. I'm going to put it back in another place. I want to put it as a fast view. This is going to be a fast view. Actually, it does not take any real estate, but it's there. So you can click on it and it shows up. You click on it and it goes away. This can be whatever you want. This perspective part can actually drop onto the top left, top right, and all that kind of stuff. There's all this usability because, you know, there's not one decision you can. With your development, yeah, I came to realize very quickly people are never happy. So stuff like that might not come. Like, because I'm a man of simple design, give me the default and I'll take it. A lot of people don't like the defaults. So give them all the options they want, people are happy. So that was lesson number one. Lesson number two, I learned actually from, because it comes to open source products, you definitely get feedback from users the day after you put it in the feature. And people are really not afraid to tell you how they feel. They're not very shy. So they will tell you, oh, you did a good job, you did a bad job, like, what were you thinking? So this, actually, I love that aspect of the job. I don't know if a lot of people actually are cutting to work in an open source project, but this is definitely an aspect of the job that I like, is the feedback. And one thing that I also learned is everybody thinks that their way of doing things is the most common usage scenario. I always get a defect saying, oh, well, the most common usage scenario is this, and that, how I do things. How can you do it differently? And you can get like 100 different most common usage scenario on one particular topic. So in UI, and PD has a lot of UI components to it, we really have to find what the common ground between what everybody's thinking, because we take user feedback very seriously, and this is what's driving most of our features. And let's talk a little bit as WT for 2 seconds, actually, what's new in 3.0. There is actually an SWT and AWT and Swing interoperability. So what that means, you can actually take a Swing component and actually embed it in an SWT component. I'm going to show you that right now. And you can do that on Windows. You all use JDK 1.4. On JDK and Motif, you can, but with JDK, I'm not sure why you need 1.5, but that's the specs. Another new thing that came with Eclipse 3.0, and for all you Linux kids out there, is there's an SWT browser widget, and within Eclipse, you can actually embed HTML documents. You can actually view them. This is actually very cool, and you can destroy it with your own HTML. I'm not going to have time to actually show it today, but what I will do is I will actually show you the SWT and Swing interoperability portion.
Is there any plan for a Qt backend to SWT?
See, I don't work on the platform-specific aspects of Eclipse like SWT, so I'm not really interested to actually comment on that, and I really have no idea if there's anything in the works. Yeah, that's a good question for the SWT team, which they might get today. So I'm going to close it. And then I'm going to launch this new example. This is going to be very nice, by the way. Hang on for your seats. Go ahead.
Is that true that the next version of Lotus Notes?
It is, but I'm going to show you what it's going to look like right now. And in 2 seconds, I'm going to show you what you were going to say Lotus Notes is going to be built on top of Eclipse, is that correct?
Yeah, is that?
I'm going to show you what it's going to look like. Well, they flew me all the way from Canada to Germany, so I have to show you something cool, right? Okay, so I have a Swing demo, and I'm going to launch it. What I'm going to do is I'm actually going to set up an Eclipse view. It's going to have some Swing components in it. Okay, and here we go. I'm going to maximize it. This is an Eclipse view. This is like a day-to-day Eclipse view, except this side we have SWT frames. And let's change the name. Oh. And you can do whatever you want to do. This is your, and I'm very familiar with those frames. I worked on Swing for a long time. Everything. So you can create them this is your this weak component embedded. And goes the other way around. You can take a, I believe you can take a subweak component and embed it into a weak component and intermix the two easily. And this is a this was definitely a big hit at Java 1 in San Francisco on in the early July when the SWT gentleman, the architect, was actually there. This is very nice. Yeah. Oh, 5 minutes. Oh crap. Well, I have until 2, right?
But the next person's going to need to prepare.
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay, I'm going to get to the Lotus Notes portion. Okay, so as I said, we get most of our feedback, a lot of our feedback, and people are not very shy, they just tell you what they want. So once we looked at the news group one day, there was this thing, how can I dump all the plugins that come with Eclipse, I don't want any of them. I know it's just the platform, because Eclipse has become such a really great architecture, this whole function extension points, and I want to get all that for free. Again, people don't want to do any work. I want to get all that for free, but I don't want GDT, I don't want resources, I don't want this whole ID aspects to just, can we like throw it all out? People before they were people except for that person, people were thinking of that all the time. But you know they said, okay, well, you know, okay, this is very ID based, and okay, you know what? We can still produce this really great markdown. So they would actually sell, they were producing products on top of an ID, but they're not really ID related. So we got that, and that kind of got us thinking. You know what? We can actually take all the basic platform plugins. And with some refactoring, there's going to be some, with some refactoring, we can actually take a subset that can actually be reused for any non-ID for application, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff that's common between desktop applications and any clips, like the extensible architecture, the component model, if you want to install an update, get an update, you want branding, help, all those things are very common. So we took the Eclipse UI, and we split it into two portions, an ID portion and a UI portion. The UI portion became the generic, generic workbench. And this is where you ask, there's definitely a balance between innovation and breaking APIs. We think breakage of APIs very seriously. So this was done, this had to be done, this breaking change, in the name of innovation, it had to be done very delicately to not break existing plugins for 2.1. Also in 3.0, we made a big change to the runtime. We're using an OSGI-based runtime because we want people to be able to install plugins on the fly and see the plugins activated right away without having to restart, and do all that. So this dynamic aspect of it, I'm going very quickly now because I have no time. And again, existing plugins will continue to work. They don't have to, it's all implementation details to the user. To us, it's a lot of work with the user, just implementation details. Bundle, plugin, who cares, all the same to me, to them, and that's what you want. So this is what the architecture looks like now. This is all the stuff in the gray is the basic stuff, and then there's all the optional stuff on top. And this is Lotus Notes. This is IBM Lotus Workplace. It's based on Eclipse, it's an Eclipse application. However, it looks something like an ID. There's no preferences, there's no, none of that stuff that you saw. There's a toolbar, you can customize your tools, you can see your views, you can see the messages. You have a calendar, you have a browser embedded. So this is an Eclipse application that looks nothing like Eclipse as it comes out of the box. And this is a prime example of what a rich client platform application is, and it's based on the Eclipse, on the new Eclipse runtime. What I'm going to do now is actually I'm going to show you, and this is the last thing probably I have to do anything else. I'm going to show you a very small example of an RCP application where I'm going to activate the plugin on the fly, and we're going to see the UI update.
That Lotus Notes, it's that software, this is the last version of Lotus Notes.
I'm sorry?
That Lotus screenshot you show,
This is a screenshot that, this is, I believe, when at the time the screenshot was taken, it was a prototype that they showed at one of the conferences. And
okay, but it's Lotus Notes, it's not based on Eclipse yet.
Not yet, no.
Last version.
No, the next version, correct. The next generation. Yeah. So I'm going to launch actually now a simple application, RCP application. It's based on Eclipse, and this is it. It's just a calculator, but yet it's based on the Eclipse platform. And what I'm going to do now, see, I have two plugins. I ran with one plugin, but the other one I have not run with it yet. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to add this plugin dynamically to the calculator. So using a console, an OSGI console, I'm going to say install and put the URL to this plugin. And this will be the end of my demo. Okay, so I installed it. Now I'm gonna refresh. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna. So what it's gonna do actually is gonna add a multiply pun on the fly. So I'm gonna refresh. So this is actually this very simple and trivial example. What that did is show you how you can add plugin dynamically without having to restart. Because just imagine if you the hassle of you learn something and you add a new plugin. Okay, I guess I have to go, so thank you all for listening.